John from 1810 to 1913 made his great-grandchildren believe you could live to 103. 103 is forever when you're just a little kid. So Cyrus Jones lived forever. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, would you make it shallow so I can feel the rain? Grave digger. Mural Stonewall, 1903 to 1954. She lost both of her babies in the Second Great War. Now you should never have to watch your only children lowered in the ground. I mean, you should never have to bury your own babies. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, could you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger. Full of roses, ashes to ashes. We all will fall down. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, can you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Little Mikey Carson, 67 to 75. He rode his bike like the devil until the day he died. And when he grows up, he wants to be Mr. Burrigo on the flying trapeze. Oh, 1940 to 1992. You dig my grave, would you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger, when you dig my grave, could you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker, and it is, wow, Thursday, June the 19th, 2014. We got a half moon up there, man. How about that? Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations in for the radio show and for little money for the POWs and little money for any extra projects we got cooking. We're trying to put up old archive stuff, special deal, stuff that's a lot of it we don't even know where it came from, where it's at, but we got it. But anyhow, if you want to put a $5 bill more in on your donation, we'll give you a password and you can go to that new section and get quite a bit of that old stuff. And I haven't even started working on the stuff I've got here in the bunker. It's unbelievable. I got cases and cases and cases of tapes and CDs here that don't know what the hell's in there. I don't want to reach in there too quick because something might bite me. Well, things have been going pretty good at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station And the weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard is just absolutely going crazy. I guess everybody's trying to keep up with all those local police departments and SWAT teams that are getting all this cheap stuff from the government. So I think they're trying to keep up, so they've got a little balance of power here. How about that? Well, here we go with the diversity crowd right off the bat. You know, with their Redskin stuff and their diversity deal. He said, if you ask Rick Waters, National Director of the Tribal Partnership for the University of Phoenix, boy, that's a mouthful, how he classifies himself, he'd say, I am a Cherokee American Indian. If you ask the same question of Reverend John Norwood, Tribal Council member and Principal Justice for the Nanticoke Lenni Lenape Tribal Nation, he'd say he's a Nanticoke Lenape American Indian. So what's the proper way to address American Indian co-workers? It depends on whom you ask, but one thing they all would agree on, to be most accurate, identify the tribe first. Quote, we are more closely identified with our tribal origins, said Norwood. It's like asking someone from Europe what they are. They would answer French or German. It's the same idea here. When someone asks you what I am, and there you go. Well, we have a problem here. Now, the Indians, so-called Indians, that are not Indians at all, they're Indians because that Christopher Columbus screwed up and thought he was in India. So these people aren't Indians at all that are doing all this bitching and yelling and changing the laws and changing trademarks and everything else. They're Mongol Asians. And so if they say, what's your origin? Well, they should say Mongolia, because their origins are not really here. From here, they're not native. Everybody came here from someplace else. But I can't understand why the Indians with dots on their head don't start complaining. Say, wait a minute, you're not even Indians, and you're wanting to fight and bitch about whether the baseball team or whatever, football team, has the term Indian on it. So next time somebody says to you something about this Redskin thing and this Indian thing, say, look, they're not Indians. And one of these days, all these Indians that have come over here with the dots on their head are going to start suing people. So that'll give them something else to go after. The only Indians that are in North America or in the Americas at all came over here on a boat much, much later. I doubt whether there was any Indians actually came over here mingling among the Mongols when they came down through probably the Aleutian Islands or like that. So that's something to tell your kids. So tell the kid, don't let your teacher con you. These are not Indians at all. Plus the fact that a majority of Indians have become interracial over the years, and some of them are so white they've got blue eyes and blonde hair and look quite Aryan. Yeah, I seen one of the tribes, the head of the tribe was blonde haired, blue eyed, tall Aryan. And up in the northeast where that Indian tribe up there had started up a gambling casino, said that if you could trace any blood, I forget the name of the tribe, then you could come up there and they'd give you like $20,000 in a house. So they had all these niggers said they could trace their ancestors back to the Indian tribes coming up there, which I don't think that's worked out too well. I haven't checked on it lately. Anyhow, I saw on the Diversity Channel that there was more than one person wrote in like I did to say that the true Indians from India that came here much later than the Mongols should be complaining about these fake Indians using their name. That's even worse than Redskins. So we'll see how far that goes. All this stuff is like free speech, and I put it on the web this morning that the only way to handle things is have total, complete free speech. And if you get offended, well, so what? Go on. Live with it. So what if you get offended? Everybody gets offended once in a while. So if you have total free speech, you wouldn't have all this quarreling and squabbling all the time. Jeez. Every little thing, they go crazy. Here's a perfect example. Now, the Supreme Court announced on Monday that it will take the Elenis case, which is set to be heard this fall, which has to do with making threats on social media. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that goes right along with free speech. As long as you don't have the capability or the wherewithal, if you're clear across the country and somebody says something, a threat on Facebook or something like that, it's ridiculous to make it a federal case. But anyhow, Elenis is just one of probably thousands of people who have used the social network to rant, bully, and threaten. Well, it takes two to tango. Just hang up on them, as we used to say on the telephone. And it's not only Facebook, they say. People have also used Twitter, YouTube, and other online social venues to reveal their dark feelings. Well, that's free speech, your dark feelings. What's wrong with that? Yeah, let me see here. There's some more of this. This kind of behavior is forbidden on Facebook and other social networks. You know, the more they do this and the more they try to restrict it, the worse it's going to get, and there's going to be a lot more violence. Let people uncork and blow off steam. When you try to restrict it, you're asking for trouble. Anyhow, the terms of service on Facebook says you may not credibly threaten others. But what do you mean? What is a threat? Is the question. That's my question. What the hell do you mean by a threat? Hell, I've been threatened a million times. And nobody's ever wanted to take a case for me and go after somebody. In fact, I just hang up on them. What the hell? Anyway, the more you try to stop activity like this, the worse it gets. You wait and see. Well, I see that Mexico and host nation Brazil are among the four nations whose fan behavior at the 2014 World Cup is being looked into by the FIFA. Fans of the El Tri have it the worst, as disciplinary procedures have already begun against them for alleged racist and homophobic actions during Friday's opener against Cameroon. Part of the problem is the chants sent towards the goalkeepers before the goal kicks, a homophobic slur common in the Mexican stadiums. Wow. Yelling the word puto. Whoa, wait a minute here. My equipment's falling apart here. Now, wait a minute, what's happening? Well, I lost my whole damn thing here. Just a second here. Okay, back where I started from. Yelling the word puto, a derogatory term to refer to homosexuals. I thought puto was Spanish for prostitute or whore. Anyhow, at the opposing goalkeeper, when he takes a goal kick, has become a Mexican trademark in soccer stadiums. This ritual is part of the live Mexican soccer experience. It happens in every single stadium in Mexico, and almost no one can be excused from participating in this act. Children who aren't allowed to use this word at the dinner table are excused when they join the thousands of fans in the stadium who yell this insult, puto, puto. Educated women who are likely not to use this word in an ordinary conversation also let go in their throats and scream the word "puto" cheerfully in unison with the rest of the crowd. During the Mexico vs. Brazil match in Fortaleza, Brazilian fans began to imitate the Mexican ritual, and FIFA took note of it. FIFA's concern is that this ritual, which they label as homophobic, will spread to fans from other countries. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, this is terrible. It's being called improper conduct, and FIFA has stepped past financial penalties into what they deem to be more effective sanctions. Oh. Tough new rules to stop such offenses were introduced by FIFA last year. A first racism offense by fans or players can be punished by having to play a game behind closed doors. Subsequent or more serious offenses can be punished by deducting points, relegation, or expulsion from a competition. FIFA is also believed to be looking into reports of homophobic chanting by Brazil's supporters and anti-Semitic and racist banners displayed by followers of Croatia and Russia. Well, I hear they even had swastika flags show up at the football game. Let's see, is that all of that story? Oh, that's funnier than hell. You can't stop it. You know, it's ridiculous. The more they try to stop it, the more it happens. Like I say, the only answer to all this is total free speech. Say what the hell you want to, as long as you don't punch somebody in the nose while you're doing it. John Schmitz, who ran for president back in the 70s, was a friend of mine, and he was a retired major colonel in the Marine Corps, I believe it was. He's dead now, but he used to say, your freedom ends... how was it he said that? Your freedom ends when my fist gets to your nose. Your free speech ends there. So say what you want, but if you hit somebody in the nose, that changes the whole program. There's a comment on that last story which supports what I said. It all depends on who's translating. Most use it to mean whore, which in those countries is further implied that only male whores are homosexual. I thought FIFA's solution to homophobia was that gay people should just stop being homosexual for a few weeks. I'm sure they're right on the case. That's funny. Are too PC. People who are too PC are putos. That's more like it. How about this one? So fans yelling anti-homosexual slang is a no-no, but awarding the World Cup to countries that actively discriminate against homosexuals is perfectly fine as long as they pay the bribe money. God, I learned a lesson today. Another one. I remember Mexico fans chanting Osama in Mexico City when our national team played there shortly after 9/11, so this seems like a step up for them. Anyhow, our lone wolf friend says there were Nazi banners at the games. Oh my goodness. They probably should. It's a wonder they didn't stop the whole game, the whole thing, and tell everybody to go home. Well, as you may know or may not know, we've had this pig virus around for a while. I mean, you know, it breaks out every once in a while. U.S. veterinarians are warning that outbreaks of a deadly pig virus will climb this autumn after a summertime hiatus, likely killing another 2.5 million pigs over the next 12 months and amplifying an increase in pork prices. I know my cousin's got a big pig farm, and he had a little bit of it in his. He got them out of there, the ones that caused the problems, and He's pretty much sealed off his farm from anybody getting close to those pigs. Concerns persist about the expected jump in infections of porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, PED small v, despite assurances from U.S. Agricultural Secretary Tom Vilsack on Wednesday that the nation is likely on the other side of the disease due to approval of the first vaccine directly available to farmers. Harris Vaccines, an Iowa-based company, developed a vaccine approved by the USDA this week. But Joel Harris, head of sales and marketing, said there were uncertainties about how much of the vaccine will thwart PEDV in cold weather. There could be situations where the virus could overwhelm the immunity of the herd, he said. The spread of PEDV, which thrives in cold and damp conditions, has slowed due to warmer temperatures after peaking in February. Well, no wonder it spread quite a bit last winter, because it was very, very cold around here. The fast-moving virus has killed an estimated 8 million pigs, or about 10% of the U.S. herd, and helped lift retail pork prices to an all-time high, around $4.10 a pound, since it first was discovered in the United States in April 2013. Prices could reach $4.64 by December, said Ricky Volpe, an economist for the USDA. A renewed PEDV outbreak could mean millions of dollars more in losses for American pig farmers and further damage to the international trade. Some pig herds have developed repeat infections, which was not expected. Researchers know the virus is transmitted through pig feces, but animal feed may be a factor too. And a comment from our lone wolf that sent this in: I guess the Jews and the Muslims on their pork-free diet won't feel the financial pinch on this one like white people will. That's true. However, a good share of those people are hypocrites among the Jews. I've sat across the table from a Jew. He was enjoying his bacon and his pork chops just like everybody else. So there's some that keep those dietary laws, but not that many. Here's a little outtake from I guess it comes from the Jews, but this is funny. He said, the biggest event in human history was the Holocaust, wiping out the native peoples of America and Africa. Slavery in general are horrible, but in the context they were taking care of business, a mechanical process contrived to kill millions of people, millions of neighbors, millions of fellow citizens, has to be the low point in humanity. I believe most things wrong in this world can be blamed on the Anglo-Saxons. But the Anglo-Saxons would never have killed the Jews because they value above all. Germans say, all ist Ordnung. And in a time dictated by the reparations of World War I, decided to blame the Jews. Well, that's because they were guilty. If an asteroid hit your neighborhood, it was a Jew that aimed it. Probably was. In the panic of economic collapse, all became perverted. Germans are trusting people. Yes, they are ultimate sheeple if the message they get has all the right seals. Even today, if you knew the truth about Austria and Germany, you would find 20% who think Hitler had the right plan. Do not condemn them so quickly. You could find 20% neo-Nazis in any Western town. In the East and the Middle, well over 50%. This is a humanity deal. How can we save the Jews? Yes, they are endangered species like killer whales. Both misunderstood, but for all their merits, not sustainable. Have you seen WWZ? This is how the modern state of Israel will end. Muslim zombies that cannot be stopped by death overflowing the walls. I do not like Likud, but my understanding of human nature tells me there is no peace to be made. What are your demands, my Muslim friends? Well, we expect you to die. So one thing I might examine on Steve TV is the role of Saudi Arabia in the preservation of the Israeli state. IMHO Saudi and Israel are butt buddies. Redefining that expression. Bro, I love you so much, I would like to... No, I'm not going to repeat that. That's too dirty. The Israeli know that Saudi would like nothing better than the destruction of Israel, yet they make great plans together in the short term. There is no big next Holocaust. There be ethnic cleansing. There be starvation. The next big event is the effect of global warming. My advice, sincerely, is to move to Canada. We are the big winners in the destruction of the global HVAC. Anyhow, that was sort of half funny, half realistic. Well, the warmongers are at it again during a panel discussion on Tuesday. Tuesday morning, Joe, neocon torchbearer and Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol, attempted to make the case that the United States needs to send thousands of troops into Iraq for an indefinite period of time without any clear mission. Essentially, he said that we need to go in and protect the Sunnis, despite the fact that ISIS is a Sunni organization, because Shia factions are now looking to take action against the Sunni population in the country. At the same time, the U.S. needs to take action against ISIS and help reestablish a stable government in Iraq. Basically, Kristol wants a bunch of U.S. troops to go into Iraq to get into the middle of a civil war with no clear enemy or directive. In other words, create a bigger mess than it is already, leaving American blood, U.S. blood, all over the Iraqi soil. Well, let's see what's happening in Brooklyn between the Negroes and the Spickos. Harlem, the increasingly bitter primary race between Representative Charlie Rangel and State Senator Adriano Espilat, might make one think Espilat's 2012 prediction of, quote, 20 years of nuclear political war, unquote, between blacks and Latinos in Upper Manhattan and the Bronx might be coming true. Espilat made the comment as the traditional black 13th district was being redrawn to include more Latinos, a group that's growing in political clout. Conflict, it was believed then, is inevitable. Well, Espilat made that comment as the traditional black 13th district was being redrawn to include the... But while race has certainly been a factor in the Espilat and Rangel's 2014 rematch during a June 6th debate, for example, Rangel asked, just what the heck has he done except say he is a Dominican? Political observers say the long alliance between blacks and Latinos in the district is not in jeopardy. They're whistling past the graveyard. Yeah. Quote, blacks and Latinos have aligned goals on issues such as economics and health care because African Americans and Hispanics have similar problems in those areas, unquote, said David Bacitis, senior research associate at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank that studies public policy issues affecting African Americans. For example, African Americans and Hispanics have supported the Affordable Care Act, an extension of unemployment benefits during the recession, and an increase in affordable child care. Also, affordable housing and access to good-paying jobs are issues black and Latino politicians in Upper Manhattan have teamed up on. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to fight. In fact, the seeds of interracial warfare are inside all those programs. Assemblyman Robert Rodriguez joined fellow Puerto Rican politicians, City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito and Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz to switch their support from Rangel to Espaillat. The alliance represents a new frontier in relations between Puerto Rican and Dominican politicians and increases opportunities for Latinos to win more citywide, statewide offices. That'll be open warfare. They're still going through sort of a honeymoon period there, but it's going to break into full-blown warfare. You wait and see. And I know what the Republicans will do. They'll try to use this to maintain their power by pitting the Mexicans and the blacks against each other, which I said years ago would happen. Those warmongers over there at Fox TV or something else, listen to this.
He should consider, because we'll at least slow this down so that he can ponder and think some more, sitting on a rock and decide what he's going to do about this situation. Because we have lost ground here. And I'm sorry, it's not just an issue of Al-Qaeda or any of these other groups or Ansar al-Sharia or ISIS. This is a whole thought process and ideology out to destroy the American way of life. And it's the guy, the 21-year-old, that starts believing this, that goes and blows himself up at the Starbucks across the street, that you have to worry about next. So sit here and do nothing, and you'll see what's going to happen. Tom, are you scared yet?
I'm getting scared as you talk. But I want to ask Eric, I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but is it really about barrels of oil? Isn't it about American influence antiquated?
Is what about that?
Our receding from responsibility in the Middle East. If we pull back, isn't it really not about oil, but rather about America's influence in the world? When we pull out, Russia and China get more powerful. Isn't that really the case, or am I wrong about that?
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Yeah, I'm saying every...
Guess what? Forget Russia. China is going to be the global superpower, and what are we going to start fighting the Chinese now? Are we going to pick fights with the Chinese?
Isn't that what being a country is about? I used to play Risk as a kid. Don't you have to keep... You got to keep your skin in the game. I'm saying if we say it's over, like what you were referencing, you know, let's get independent, and we'll just get out of that region altogether, which is what Al-Qaeda wants, right? I mean, that is their wish, is for us to get off the Arabian Peninsula completely. But when we do that,
we win. We don't lose bodies and money. They win. They want us off their soil anyway. And we're energy independent. It seems to me like it's a win-win-win.
But what are you going to do about the threat level, the threat to Americans?
To
I don't understand why you're...
Help me out here.
Because
I'm
trying to help you out. Okay. I agree with you about energy independence, but I think you're being politically naive with all due respect, and I haven't sent you any tweets. But I'm about to, during the commercial break, about your philosophy, how we handle the Middle East. What have we been doing for all these years
and
to try to secure our position? And now you just go ahead and throw up a white flag?
Here's what we've been doing. We've been losing tens of thousands of bodies to injury, to death, $2 trillion in wars. And what do we have to show for it? The minute we pull back, and within 12 months of pulling back out of Iraq, they're back to the godforsaken place that they were before we went there.
If you don't beat them back, Erica, their way of life will come over here.
My last piece of philosophy, let them have the freaking Middle East. Keep it. It's all yours. With the exception of Israel, back Israel. Give them money, give them support, give them tanks, give them airplanes, give them a pat on the back, say, you know what, Netanyahu, go get them.
Adios.
He doesn't want to hear that.
I can't believe that you're attacking Eric for being rational. I mean, the fact is, look, this is not about attacking our way of life. This is about Sunnis and Shia and all their craziness.
And it's about the caliphate,
and you want us
which they're one step closer to achieving.
Those people are nuts. I mean, and you want us in the middle of their nuttiness?
Yeah.
That's just crazy. And the second thing to say is, what is it that gives you guys, I mean, especially the hardcore Republican line? I saw Dick Cheney, former vice president, writing a piece. Harry Reid said today, if you Republicans know so much, what's your great idea? What do you think? You want to send more young people to die? You want to send Eric's kids
Dick
to die?
Cheney. Here's somebody who gets it, and it was in the Bush White House, actually we were feared and respected in the world, which we don't have right now. So listen to this. He said, American freedom will not be secured by empty threats. meaningless red lines, leading from behind, appeasing our enemies, abandoning our allies, or apologizing for our great nation. All hallmarks to date of the Obama doctrine.
Oh my
our God. Security and the security of our friends around the world can only be guaranteed with a fundamental reversal of the policies of the past 6 years.
Let me ask you something. Does that guy have no shame? Is that the same guy that got us in the mess the first time that's led to this mess?
Yeah, you know what?
I can't believe that the people like Vice President Cheney, I can't believe that there's so many of these guys who want us to go down the same path.
Let me tell you something.
After they were so
wrong. With all due respect, Vice President Dick Cheney knows a lot more about it than anybody at this
table. That's why he was so wrong.
To the intel report.
I see. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that he was wrong, Kimberly. We should send more young people.
You're the one saying that. No one's wanting to sacrifice American lives. We are doing this so that we don't have to lose more.
Can we also just go? Go ahead, Mario. Can we just go back to 12 years ago? Or 13 years, 12 and a half years ago, on 9/11, when we were attacked, we got the surprise attack. You know, we lost 3,000 people down here. We lost hundreds in the Pentagon. Everyone was united in America to go on. So I'm going to disagree with you on why we initially went. My question, and I'm simply saying, we did it for a reason. America needed to do what we needed to do at that point. Things have changed, though. The environment has changed. The American appetite for war is going down. Our ability to satisfy our own oil needs has increased. There are a lot of reasons why, in my opinion, people, just in my little world here, people just don't want to do that again. At that time, it was the right thing to do. This time, I'm going to disagree.
Well, then that's going to be America's Achilles heel because then we have exhaustion and fatigue to fight our enemies. And that's when they defeat us.
Do you know what Harry Reid said on the Senate floor? He said, listen, are you saying that you would have had Americans stay in Iraq all this time? Is that what Republicans think?
It's just, Dana. I think it's really a disservice to be that simplistic in describing the situation. I am fine with going back and with people saying that Bush was wrong. I disagree, but fine. Let's just say that he was wrong. It was the wrong thing to do. Okay, so then you inherit a situation that was actually pacified. You promise that you tell the American people that you will be safer now because we have succeeded in Iraq. The generals tell them to keep more people there.
Well, I don't know whether you remember me talking to you about this. It's been a while back. But I said, you know, the best thing that could happen to the shipping the jobs out was to foment the riots in these countries or whatever, encourage their labor to rise up and burn them out. Yeah. Well, I said it will happen. And, of course, the corporations will cry and moan and want the federal government to send in troops to save their asses and their property or their factories. This is in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Hanoi, the waves of riots that followed peaceful demonstrations in Vietnam last month and targeted crucial manufacturing centers provide a cautionary tale for businesses who view the country as a low-risk, stable manufacturing environment. In other words, cheap labor and no big problems. But these countries always sooner or later have problems. The thousands of peaceful demonstrators gathered in four cities, thousands, May 11th to protest China's placement of an oil rig in waters claimed by the Vietnamese. You see, it doesn't have to be directly aimed at the U.S. corporations or even the United States. They could just be there. And when thousands of people get pissed off, they start burning down things. Days later, five people died in separate wave of riots whose leaders haven't been publicly identified in the country's provinces, and hundreds of factories owned by Chinese and other foreign country companies were looted and torched. Well, it says other foreign companies. Probably a lot of American companies got burnt. Yeah. That's the gamble you make, and especially nowadays when you can't expect the U.S. government. We've got troops everywhere, and they can't just come to the aid of every little money-grubbing capitalist corporation. Although the initial spark for the protest was China's oil rig, a Wall Street Journal investigation into the causes of the subsequent violence involved interviews with more than 40 activists, workers, foreign factory managers, and government officials showed that anti-Chinese sentiment combined with a host of other grievances in a potent and explosive mix. The riots were a shock in a country manufacturers have viewed as stable, attractive, an alternative to China. Wages in Vietnam are less than half those in China and among the cheapest in Southeast Asia. And of course, that's the main point. That's it. Vietnam now attracts more money relative to the size of its economy than any other Southeast Asian country besides Singapore. Foreign investment pledges jumped to $22.34 billion last year from $16.3 billion in 2012. And of course, nobody gives a shit that 50,000 Americans died there just a few years ago. As long as we can get in there and make plenty of money on cheap labor, which was what it was all about anyhow. You follow the money, you're going to find out that they make these plans way ahead of time. And I told you that Intel, 10 years ago, had the biggest semiconductor plant in the world there in Vietnam. Probably American soldiers' bones are underneath the building. The violence was especially troubling for many foreign factory managers. Good. I hope they're scared shitless, since the attacks seemed to come out of the blue. Quote, the workers have always been peaceful before, even when they held strikes, said Saigon Dar Yar Plastics Company Chief Executive Jamison Chang, who lost 4 million overnight in a factory fire. Good for him. The peaceful protests, which took place in cities, championed causes ranging from the release of political prisoners to complaints about confiscation of land by officials. The riots, which happened in provinces, appeared to be mostly about looting, with rioters shouting nationalist slogans along with calls to end worker exploitation, according to onlookers and Vietnamese officials. Well, I back them 100%. Drive those Yankee dogs out of there, so they got to come back here and rebuild their plants and hire Americans. A month later, the Vietnamese government has slammed the lid back on public dissent and has begun to send some offenders to prison. See, the government will always come and back up the corporations. Police have tracked down some of the stolen goods and returned them, and the government is working to reassure rattled foreign investors. Oh, they're getting scared? Well, you want to scare them a hell of a lot more until they're afraid to invest in countries like that, corporations that do business in countries like that. It's coming. In the old days, you used to send in the gunboats to back up these outfits, but it's getting very difficult to do that nowadays. Most foreign firms say they are staying due to the high cost of relocation and the government's assurance there wouldn't be a repeat. No, they're staying because of cheap labor. And they're willing to risk it all on cheap labor, thinking that the U.S. Marines will come in and save their ass. Yet the sudden violent blow-up, which took both government officials and initially protest organizers by surprise, suggests deep resentments are still bottled up beneath the apparent calm. Now remember, people are still dying from Agent Orange that we dumped all over Vietnam. Quote, some people use the riots as an excuse to act out grievances such as workers who had been fired from factories, unquote, said Johnny Leo, chief executive of the Taiwanese label printing company Daily Full International Printing, who hid in a locked bathroom for 7 hours as rioters ransacked his factory in southern Vietnam. The events began peacefully in early May when the activists, largely urban academics, lawyers, and writers attached to the human rights groups, began for the first time to plan a joint protest. China's rig was a convenient target. Quote, "We picked the oil rig because it's the common issue that not only all the groups but the whole nation is very concerned about," said Vu Dong Ha, chief editor of the independent news website Da Nam Bao, and one of the organizers. "Also, we thought this issue gave us less pressure from the government. Normally, Vietnamese officials quash such protests, but this time the government would let the protests proceed," a former top police officer told the activists, according to the Nguyen Van Dai, a protest organizer who spent 4 years in prison for his pro-democracy views. Well, anyhow, that's my point. As I've said for a long time, instead of Americans backing the government to send troops in to protect manufacturers who have gone into these countries for cheap labor and left the United States, we should not send one troop, one soldier, one Marine to protect one capitalista that's doing business in these countries. In fact, we should encourage, at least psychologically, the workers in those countries to rise up and burn them out. That, to me, is logic. It's not logical to do the gunboat thing like we used to do. Anytime a capitalist had problems in another country, send the troops in? Huh, screw you. Yeah. Now, you see, they're doing the same thing in Iraq they've done in all these other countries. As long as the dictator was successful and served our purposes and didn't give us too much flack, he was our boy or our girl, you know, depending on where you're at. And then when things get hairy and they've used that particular dictator to get everything they want, because there's nothing that Malachi is doing in Iraq that doesn't come right out of Washington, D.C. and Wall Street. He was a total puppet, just like all these other dictators they put in. So now things are going a little... He got too big for his pants and didn't do any inclusive fence mending. And so now he's got the tremendous amount of people rising up against him. So guess what? They do what they always do in Washington. They say, well, it's time for Maliki to go. The Obama administration is signaling that it wants a new government in Iraq without Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Convinced the Shiite leader is unable to reconcile with the nation's Sunni minority and stabilize a volatile political landscape. Well, he was all right when he had, what, 50, 60, 70, 80,000 troops? The United States thought, Washington thought they were safe? Oh, yeah. And we can continue to rob Iraq of natural resources and everything else? But the minute things start turning a little ugly, their little puppet, Maliki's not looking so good. Just like in all the other countries that we have propped up dictators. Such a new government, U.S. officials say, would include the country's Sunni and Kurdish communities and could help to stem Sunni support for the Al-Qaeda offshoot, the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, or ISS, that has seized control of Iraqi cities over the past 2 weeks, that the officials argue would help to unify the country and reverse its slide into sectarian. Nobody believes this shit. Those Sunni and Shiites are not going to get together. They've hated each other since forever. Do you think they're going to believe anybody that says, hey, we want to, you know, we want to have more transparency, we want to include you in? How are they going to include people in when you get them in the same room and they're going to pull a gun and shoot each other? How are you going to do that? This is all bullshit out of Washington. They know it's totally, they've totally lost control. Totally lost control. It makes me very happy when they lose control. When the capitalists lose control and the treasonous politician, warmonger bastards lose control, makes my day. It looks like the IS people have grabbed that big distillery over there, that gasoline cracking plant, because their black flag is waving in the breeze over the place. Oh, that's, if they've taken that, that's going to cost them a fortune. That's going to cost the capitalistas a fortune. I'll bet there's a lot of meetings going on Wall Street. Of course, meanwhile, we got to get back to the important business of finding these ex-camp guards from World War II that were teenagers when they were camp guards. This 89-year-old guy, order held for his alleged role as a camp guard. Shit. Yeah, like I said yesterday, they're going to start be picking up people who drove taxis in Berlin. They can never run out of targets. The Jews will never run out of targets. They'll always figure something. But, of course, the Jews never seem to expose or do anything about the Soviets, who certainly killed a lot of Jews. And of course you had the wolf in the Kremlin, Kazanovich, who was a Jew and who was in charge of all the mass killings for Stalin. You got thousands of these old guys still alive that were in the Cheka and all that kind of stuff over there. And why not go after them for a while? Why not go after them? You don't want to open up that kettle of worms, do you? That's right, Jew boy. I see that Kiev in the Ukraine has offered to declare a temporary unilateral ceasefire in the east after Kiev regains full control of its border. But of course, the hook in the ointment there, the hook in the piece of meat was, first you rebels got to lay down your guns. Lay down your guns first, and then we'll have a ceasefire. Yeah, right. Like saying, well, you people out there, if you'll turn in all your guns here in the United States, we'll disband the Homeland Security, and we'll take back all this military surplus we're giving to local police stations. Yeah? You promise? Oh, okay, here's my gun. Well, here's something that's sort of buried back on page 4. read between the lines on this one. Lawmakers on Wednesday voiced concern over the Obama administration's plans for monitoring individuals who hold security clearances as part of a crackdown in the wake of leaks by former government contractor Edward Snowden. I don't believe that's the whole reason at all. I think they're beginning not to trust their own people. Generally, Senators Charles Grassley, Republican, and Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, sent in a letter to Director of National Intelligence James Clapper that the stated possibility of continuous evaluation of legislative officials would raise constitutional questions, and that extensive employee monitoring could inhibit people from coming forward to point out fraudulent or illegal activities. Well, they want to keep an eye on all of us, so now they don't even trust their own people with secret clearances. You know how this is moving. You see how this is moving? This is just starting. This is just starting. Washington and the industrial complex are going to be tightening up tighter and tighter, that they don't trust anybody. That's good. that's going down the road towards a collapse. Especially in light of recent events, we first ask that you confirm that you did not intend to suggest that members of Congress or staff members in the legislative branch would be subject to continuous evaluation, the senators wrote. Well, no, that's just for the working people out there, not for us congressmen. We're above reproach, you know that. One recent event was the charge by Senator Dianne Feinstein, Swinestein, as she's lovingly known as in California, that the Central Intelligence Agency conducted a search of computers that the state or the Senate Intelligence Committee used for its investigation into the agency's interrogation program, which she said may have violated the constitutional separations of powers and the Fourth Amendment. They don't give a shit about the Constitution. This is funny, though. I saw that article way back, too. Swinestein said, well, you can do it to other people. Well, you're doing it to me. Don't you trust me? I'm a U.S. senator. Oh, there's signs of there's cracks in the wall of the empire beginning. They're just tiny ones, just little fissures right now. But they're going to grow, baby. They're going to grow. Well, anyhow, that's about it. the empire is slowly but surely showing signs of stress. The walls are getting tiny cracks in them. They're going to grow to giant holes as time goes on. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the Bunker. Terrible Tommy here. 14:05. And shut up. But don't let anybody talk you anything crazy now, because your best attack is to be cool, calm, collected, and wait. Just like in these other countries with these unconventional warfare groups. Like I played earlier, they waited, they waited, they waited. And when their time came, they did the number, baby. Ha ha!